Numbers 23. Balaam said, "Build me 7 altars here and prepare 7 bulls and 7 rams for me." Balak did as Balaam said, and the two of them offered a bull and a ram on each altar. Then Balaam said to Balak, "Stay here beside your offering while I go aside. Perhaps the Lord will come to meet with me. Whatever he reveals to me, I will tell you." Then he went off to a barren height. God met with him, and Balaam said, "I have prepared 7 altars, and on each altar I have offered a bull and a ram." The Lord put a message in Balaam's mouth and said, "Go back to Balak and give him this message." So he went back to him and found him standing beside his offering with all the princes of Moab. Then Balaam uttered this oracle: "Balak brought me from Aram, the king of Moab, from the eastern mountains. Come," he said, "curse Jacob for me. Come, denounce Israel. How can I curse those whom God has not cursed? How can I denounce those whom God has not denounced? From the rocky peaks I see them. From the heights I view them. I see a people who live apart and do not consider themselves one of the nations. Who can count the dust of Jacob or number the fourth part of Israel? Let me die the death of the righteous, and may my end be like theirs." Balak said to Balaam, "What have you done to me? I brought you here to curse my enemies, but you have done nothing but bless them." He answered, "Must I not speak what the Lord puts in my mouth?" Then Balak said to him, "Come with me to another place where you can see them. You will see only a part, but not all of them, and from there curse them for me." So he took him to the field of Zophim on the top of Pisgah, and there he built 7 altars and offered a bull and a ram on each altar. Balaam said to Balak, "Stay here beside your offering while I meet with him over there." The Lord met with Balaam and put a message in his mouth and said, "Go back to Balak and give him this message." So he went to him and found him standing beside his offering with the princes of Moab. Balak asked him, "What did the Lord say?" Then he uttered this oracle: "Arise, Balak, and listen. Hear me, son of Zippor. God is not a man that he should lie, nor a son of man that he should change his mind. Does he speak and then not act? Does he promise and not fulfill? I have received a command to bless. He has blessed, and I cannot change it. No misfortune is seen in Jacob, no misery observed in Israel. The Lord their God is with them. The shout of the king is among them. God brought them out of Egypt. They have the strength of a wild ox. There is no sorcery against Jacob, no divination against Israel. It will now be said of Jacob and of Israel, 'See what God has done.' The people rise like a lioness. They rouse themselves like a lion that does not rest till he devours his prey and drinks the blood of his victims." Then Balak said to Balaam, "Neither curse them at all, nor bless them at all." Balaam answered, "Did I not tell you I must do whatever the Lord says?" Then Balak said to Balaam, "Come, let me take you to another place. Perhaps it will please God to let you curse them for me there." And Balak took Balaam to the top of Peor, overlooking the wasteland. Balaam said, "Build me 7 altars here and prepare 7 bulls and 7 rams for me." Balak did as Balaam had said and offered a bull and a ram on each altar.
This is called the Book of Balaam or Balaam or Balaam, sometimes also called the Book of Barak. Depends upon how one wants to reword it. Okay. What is your comments, your thoughts?
The number 7.
First what?
The number 7.
Oh, yes.
We'll get to that. How do they know? Huh? And then number three as well.
And number three. You're getting there a little ahead, but you've got number three is listed. We got three listed. We have seven is listed. Before I go into any more explanation of this particular thing, what is it that you think that what do you think was trying to take place? What is it you think that not Balaam, but Barak was trying to do? Balak, what was he trying to do?
He was trying to get his own way and get God to side with him, or at least give him victory over Israel.
Okay.
I think he was afraid of the Israelites.
He was terrified of them because the power of the Israelites were just overwhelming. Not in numbers. Let's get this clarification here of where Balak put Balaam to see. Balaam did not see the entire all of Israel. It's pretty clear in that very first sentence. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But we have here, yes?
I don't understand why Balak kept... I mean, I can see him saying part of it and saying, curse him. But seven altars, seven rams and seven bulls, and then seven altars and seven... I mean...
I repeated it three times.
Yeah.
What does it tell you that Balak knew?
He knew that sacrifices were supposed to please God.
What kind of sacrifices?
The bull and the ram.
The bull and ram. The bull is a what? Hola offering. And the ram is a what?
Yep.
A sin offering. All right. Now, we're talking to the Gentile world. And how did the Gentile world know that?
They asked.
No. It's not that they asked. They knew. How did they know?
They probably observed them and seen the power that God went before them with when they were obedient to God to do their sacrifices and worship him the way he commanded.
Who would have taught Balak?
Were they descendants of Abraham?
Yes.
They were descendants of Abraham, yes, but Abraham didn't have the same commandments that the Israelites had at this point in time. Who would have taught?
Jethro.
A prophet of God would have taught them that. That's the only way they would know. Who is the prophet?
Balaam.
Balaam's a prophet. He's a prophet to the Gentiles. So God did not leave the Gentiles out of the thing. Now the commandments for the Israelites were for a certain purpose and reason, explanation. We won't go through that today because it's pretty lengthy. But the Gentile world also understood something. Now they weren't required to give as many. They were required to give a Thanksgiving offering. They were required to give a Shalom offering. But they were required to give a whole offering and a sin offering. And there are seven of them. Makes it complete, yes.
What I'm wondering here is, when I was reading this last night about Balak's tenacity, but and then it dawned on me a little bit. That's how they treat their own gods. That their own gods are fickle and open to persuasion and open to every whim, as long as you can twist the whim just the right way. And so Balak is dragging Balaam to hither and thither and everywhere.
And what did
that right angle? And, you know,
couldn't do it.
That God could be, that Jehovah or Yahweh could be manipulated the same way that they manipulate their own gods.
That's correct. It's the simplicity of the matter.
Yeah.
Now, and it says Balaam was a prophet of God to the Gentile world. They weren't left without understanding. We kind of think the Gentile world was without understanding. And we mentioned before, we have this guy, Balaam, Balak is a descendant of who? He's a Moabite. Now, what was Lot called? a righteous man. And so they're not out there saying, oh, I didn't know what's going on. No, the knowledge is very evident. We go into this prophecy of Balak in the next chapter. We won't go there today. But there is something the Apostle Paul had made a statement on, which I'll talk about next week. But nonetheless, we're looking here, we're seeing that this guy, seven times, and his princes, plurality. How many were there? There's seven of them. One bull, one sin offering for each one of those princes that were with the king, and one for he himself. Now, Balak didn't say to the others, arise. But he did say that to Balak. Because you know what happens to the other princes? They're going to do exactly what the king tells them to do. So they're really kind of like, okay, I'll follow the order because after all, he's the king, you know. He's the boss. He's the ruler. Now, what's so odd about this particular story, remember, the location where they were at. They weren't in the land of Moab. They had passed Moab and had gone in the land of Ammon. And they defeated the land of Ammon and took them captive. And they defeated the other three kings that were farther north. Now Moab is terrified because of that battle they won. Why would he be terrified? Israelites were knocking about to come back and conquer Moab. Why? They don't need to, because they weren't supposed to go there in the first place. They're supposed to go into the Canaanite lands. So we have here a very interesting prophecy. That's a prophetic one that comes about. He says, arise. The king rose. He said, I'm going to tell you something here. I'm using my own words here. I'm going to read it here from the Jewish translation. It's very fascinating here. And this is interesting how it's worded, because it kind of says the same thing. Let's see, where am I at now?
What verse?
I'm going to go to, we are in verse 18. In Hebrew, by the way, it's kind of fascinating. He was not commanded in the direct Hebrew language to give a blessing to Israel. The Hebrew is very clear that it is God who blessed Israel already. And says God blessed Israel already, you cannot unbless it. And we'll get into the next chapter next week to have a little clarification. He proclaimed his parable, or this statement. The word parable is interesting terminology here, because parables also have a prophetic statement within them. They're one of the parables that are spoken of by Jesus, has a prophetic statement within it. And said, stand erect, O Balak, and hear, give ear to me, O son of Zippor. God is not a man that he should be deceitful. Interesting word, isn't it? Remember he said this thing about, oh, I'll think it out, see if I can cause my God to be deceitful and do a deceitful thing, even though, what is deceitful? The Israelites won't know that you are the cause of the deceit. Right? Because you want to do something in secret, right? You want to deceive somebody. You don't want to, by the way, Joy, I'm going to deceive you. Are you ready? Yeah. You're ready. Don't bother, You're on guard. But see, to be able to deceive nor lie. It's a fascinating terminology when you're looking at this thing. And to keep in mind that the every nation on the face of the earth has an Elohim. Okay? Now, what does that mean? For more of those who do not know?
The powerful one.
The powerful one. The one that has a lot of strength and power and basically has authority. Remember, even during the time of the temptation of Christ, what did he say? I will give you all of the kingdoms of the earth. Because why? Who owned them?
He did.
Who, yeah, right. Jesus didn't own them. God didn't own them. The devil owned them. Simple as that. Well, he's going to give it to them. So in this particular state we're looking at here, and remember, when God brought them out of Egypt, this is a prophecy about bringing them out of Egypt. Now God started moving and making a nation and forming a nation for the first time with Israel. Before, there was no nation. Abraham wasn't a nation. Jacob wasn't a nation. His sons were not nations. They were just sons of Jacob. They didn't become a nation until God called out the nation. Now, the powers of the air, the Elohim of the air, the principalities of the air, the Apostle Paul talks about, are the ones that are at fighting, we're fighting against. And so we see here the story of Balaam. The one that's in charge of Moab could not curse Israel. Couldn't do it. You know, the Elohim of the air, principal of the air, can actually curse another country that has nothing to do with God. That's why people go to war. The principalities of the air. And the book of Daniel explains that, right? This principality of the air went fought against that principality of the air, and guess who was in between? What king was in between them all? Remember? King of Persia.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't Cyrus. Remember the one who put Daniel in the lion's den?
Darius.
There you go. Darius. And who came to Darius's aid?
Gabriel.
Gabriel. Who was Gabriel fighting?
The Prince of Persia.
The Prince of Persia. Not the nation of Persia. The Prince of Persia. Okay? So it's fascinating to know that since we live on the earth, we are not knowing what goes in the principalities of the air, what goes up in the air. One of these days I'll go into a better explanation of that, but not today. He said, now verse 22, and it is God who brought them out of Egypt according to the power of his loftiness, or his highness, his glory. For there is no deviation in Jacob, and no sorcery in Israel. Now, these are very interesting terminologies. In Hebrew, it says there's no deviation which is against Jacob. Listen carefully to this word. But there is a deviation that is for Israel. We don't like the word deviation. But what's that word deviation comes from? The what? Divine. Divine intervention. A divine thing. Now, the angelic world, or the principalities of the world, are deviations. They are divine people. Not holy. Different words. Divine does not always mean holy. It means those are in power of the air, principalities of the air. Okay? So we're dealing with that kind of a concept. So it's very fascinating to know that I want to go, now I'm going to finish this translation, but I want you to know a pattern. So we're going to reach it into the 24th chapter, and I have to get a better explanation to it next week, because I got a, do I have it till 2 o'clock?
Yes.
Or quarter to?
No, two.
Oh, okay.
You're doing good.
Let's see, where I want to go from here. Verse 10. Now, it's an interesting Hebrew word here. I think you might find it kind of interesting. Who can count the
dust
of Jacob? Or number 1/4 of Israel. You notice a pattern constantly within. First is Jacob, then is Israel, then is Jacob, then is Israel, then is Jacob, and then there's Israel. Is God confused? Don't know who's who?
No.
So there is a prophecy here of Jacob, and there's a prophecy here of Israel. What is the difference?
Jacob was before the meeting with the angel, and Israel was afterwards.
Yeah, so what we're doing here, we're seeing what God did to Jacob. And he said, what about Jacob?
Dust.
You cannot count the
dust.
Now, that word comes from not the word Eretz, but the word dirt, ground, the dust. It's an interesting terminology. He says, what is the dust of Jacob? Basically, the offspring of Jacob. That's all that refers to, is the offspring of Jacob is lots of dust. You know, pick up a handful of dust, all over the place. Yes?
But wait a minute. Like you were saying earlier, the strength of Israel wasn't in their numbers.
Correct. No, we're getting to the numbers now comes in. Because where Balaam was, he was on a, it says here on the rocks, plurality. But what that means in Hebrew, it was not he was standing on a bunch of rocks. He was standing into a cave or a cove that was in the rocks. So he had not a good view. He couldn't see all of Israel. But it had made no difference whether he could see or not see. Because he had to say what God said for him to say. Jacob had not yet reached the number of dust yet. It's a prophecy how far the descendants of Jacob and the number of Jacob descendants would be in the sense like it was with Abraham, with the stars and the sand of the sea, unable to count them, the innumerable. Now ask yourself, were they counted in the book of Numbers?
No.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's what the book of Numbers is all about. They actually counted them. They actually were counted. It tells you how many they were. It tells you the number. It tells you how many were in this tribe, how many in that tribe, how many in this tribe. So they were numbered. But see, Balaam is not talking about what was, but what will. Okay? You can't count the number of Israel. You can't even count a quarter of them. But they were counted, weren't they? We got that evidence. It's written down before you. But this is the words that God said to Balaam. Now, Balaam was a Gentile prophet. Yes?
When they had a census, that was when the father would tell them to do it. Not like David did it one time and that got it.
Right, yes. Daniel has to explain that one more in detail when he gets there, if he ever managed to get that far. But anyway, the fascinating thing about the number isn't that Balaam says, I can't count them. He's staping a statement of profound prophecy about the dust of Jacob. And he's talking about the number of Israel. You can't even count a quarter of them, even though they were counted. It's a prophetic thing deep in the future. We'll see that we get in the 24th chapter. We won't go there today. But see, I want to show you what we're looking here is a prophecy in the future, not the present. Balaam wasn't prophesying or blessing or wasn't doing the cursing for a curse he wanted to at the very beginning. But he's talking about what God said to Balak. You say this to Balak. Balak, listen. Who can count the descendants of Jacob? No man. But God can. Because we have a prophecy that says, not one seed of Jacob I have not counted. No man can count. And I'll tell you about the quarter, one quarter, fascinating terminology. You can't even count the quarter of them.
Right.
It's too massive, too big. Not then, because they were counted. Way in the future. So prophecy that he said about Jacob. Jacob, dust you cannot count. Oh, when did he say that? When did God say that to Jacob? He said it at the same time when he said it to
Abraham.
Said it to Isaac. He said it to Jacob. And Jacob passed it on to whom? Joseph and his sons. The innumerable count is going to be massive. It's going to be huge. We're not only talking about the flesh and blood of Jacob, but also with Abraham, the believer that is not of the house of Jacob can become amongst those that are counted. Apostle Paul says, once you were what? A stranger. Now you are counted amongst the commonwealth of Israel. So that number cannot be counted. The dust of Jacob increases. The physical flesh and blood of Jacob. Then there's this dust of Jacob. And the dust of Jacob comes by those who believe and are joined into the house of Israel, or joined into the commonwealth of Israel, the Gentiles coming in. How many Gentiles out there do you know who believe? It's quite a bit, right? There's quite a bit out there, right? You're stuck. But you can't count them. We know some of them. We probably count us in this room. But the dust is big. The dust is not necessarily the physical flesh, but also the spiritual flesh that has been joined itself to the commonwealth of Israel. A prophecy, a prophetic thing that's going deep in the future. So when we look at this prophecy about, I find what we have here in verse 31. He has not observed iniquity in Jacob. Wow. What? You mean Jacob had no inequity? You mean Jacob had nothing wrong with him? Or is he talking about something much bigger?
Much bigger.
Okay, what is the bigness? Okay, I'm going to put it this way. When let me look at this again. When does inequity no longer found in Jacob?
When the last part of the voice, when the shout of a king is among them, when
okay,
the Messiah comes and cleans them all up.
No. What? What?
Brings
yes.
them out of Egypt.
Well, it just makes me think of something that Messiah said to one particular one, where he said that here is a true Israelite in whom there is no lie or no
deceitfulness.
No guile.
Okay. All right. Okay. What? I'll make it a mistake. What holy day is there that removes inequity from the house of Israel?
The
day of Yom Kippurim. And so we're not talking, he's not talking about the Jacob then. He's not talking about the Jacob in the past. He's not talking about Israel then. He's talking about, I find absolutely no inequity. Wait a minute. When does he find no inequity? When there is none. And no time there is none is when the Day of Atonement comes, which means we're prophetically in the future, we know what Day of Atonement represents, right? The complete cleansing. The purification. And this is the reason why you have Israel. The next statement says about Israel. Where was that now? And there's no deviation against Israel. There is no divine, the God himself is not against Israel. Yeah, we have prophecy here. How often God's against Israel? I'm against you, O Israel. I'm against you, O Israel. I'm against you, O Israel. And he punishes Israel time in, time out, time in, time out. When does there is no more, is there going to be no more divine against Israel?
When all Israel shall be saved.
All Israel will be saved. The Apostle Paul comes in. See, the Apostle Paul was full of wisdom. He understood many, many things, and we're trying to figure out completely. But here, these are prophecies of the incredible deep future. Balaam had no knowledge of what he was saying.
Right.
The next chapter, he did. But he won't go there today. But when you look at this thing and you're saying, okay, now there's a breakdown between the two. And verse 23, the last half of that, it now must be said of Jacob and of Israel. Now they're both together as a unity. Oh, that God has done. Well, he hasn't done anything yet. What is going to, a prophetic thing deep in the future. And we'll see that in the 24th chapter when we get there. Look, a people rises like a lioness and lifts itself up like a lion. It shall not lie down until it devours the prey and drinks the blood of the slain. Going to get even. All of a sudden Israel and Jacob are united together and they're going to go to war against their enemy. One's called a lion, and then one's called a lioness. They're joining together. Now, there's one more place I wanted to go. I'm sorry, what?
Is this prophetic of a war against Moab?
I think it's against the Gentile world. I don't think it's just Moab. I think it's just, because just the book of Balaam, Balaam was a prophet to the Gentile world, period. Point. He wasn't a Moabite.
Okay.
He was on the other side of the river.
Okay.
That's why this says, you have brought me from afar and brought me to here.
To this land.
Okay.
Before you go to the next topic you wanted to cover, you said in the very, very beginning, and I didn't shoot up my hand quick enough because I was searching. How did you know that there were seven princes?
Yeah, I didn't find it either.
In the Torah.
Yeah.
In the Torah, even a king or a priest, when he must give an offering, it's one bull and one sin offering.
Right.
The high priest, nor do a king give that. So each one of those princesses were in position of authority. They were princes in that world. They were in charge. They had authority over the tribe and the family of Moab. Each one of those were under the main king.
Okay.
But the king himself...
They just were.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
Of course, seven means completion. We know that too.
Yeah.
There was someone else, or someone asked a question. I can't remember what it was. Oh, the king. Verse 20. I think it's very fascinating, 21. Verse 21. prophecy that's going to happen in the future, not what was happening then, because Israel did not have a
king.
Oh, yes, it did.
No.
It says what it says. It's fascinating who the king really is here. No, this is his, and has not iniquity, a verse in that last part, and Yahweh, his Elohim, is with him. With whom? Jacob? And the shout, now it's an odd word, of a king is among them. What does that mean? What does a shout of a king mean? It's an odd phrase, you gotta admit that, right? It's a weird Hebrew definition in this one. Yes, it can mean shout, but there's other meanings to that Hebrew word. The rejoicing of a king is among them. The joy, the gladness, you could hear the king amongst them. The king is making a noise, which we get from the, also been translated as, like a shofar, a sound of a trumpet. Now, did Balaam hear it? Did Balak hear it?
No.
Well, we know who the king's going to be, right? And we have in the book of Acts, what is the first thing those guys asked Jesus? Will you now restore the kingdom of God?
The kingdom of Israel.
Would you now, you restore now the kingdom of Israel? Because see, that was their king. The prophecy way back in talked about a Messiah, a king of Israel that was going to come up, and Balaam did not know it until the next chapter. But Balak had to know there is, the king is among them and not among Moab. We have to go into some other prophecy. I don't want to go there because it's going to be too complicated. But understand something about the king. Is something that the world has, including to that point in time, looked for, longed for, waited for, and desired for. There's a prophecy about the Messiah, and it says it's the ones that the goyim are wanting. The goyim. It'll be the joy of the goyim. After Israel's been established, or Israel established, what is it in this world are the goyim waiting for?
Messiah.
The Messiah. They're waiting for the what coming? The first one? They're waiting for the second coming of the Messiah. They're waiting for it to come, and they're going to wait, and they're going to wait. And what the goyims are, I'm using that word understanding, we're talking about the goyims who believe, not the goyims that don't. We're talking about Israel and the non-Israelite, because it's very fascinating about this one. He says, a king, a nation, where was that word? It was in verse 9. For from the top of the rocks I see him, and from the hill behold him. There a people dwelling, what?
Alone.
That's strange.
Separate.
And they're not reckoning itself or themselves, or it is not, that dwelling of a nation is not considered one of them that is in the world. Not recognized. Now we have this political thing here in our country, and in the world. Political. What's that? Diplomatic recognition. Have a diplomatic recognition. And here we're seeing that the only one that gets recognized as Israel. By whom? By God. God doesn't recognize the rest. Because he's not dealing with the rest. The rest have to come. As much as, in parallel, as much as you look at the United States of America, and we, because we are Americans, we have a tendency to see an awful lot of faults. We have a tendency to see an awful lot of inequities. We have a tendency to see an awful lot of sins. We'll get to the 24th chapter next week. But I want you to know something. The world longs for the blessings this country has received. They long for it. They want it. They desire it. It's not given to them. Every blessing this country has gotten, it is not because we're brilliant, because we're smart, because we outsmarted or we maneuvered. We did all sorts of deceiving, underhanded maneuvering things. The blessing comes from only one source and one source only, and that is by the eternal God. And we should recognize our sins, our transgressions, and our iniquities. Because we need to. Bill.
And the purpose for that blessing is to help Israel, right? More or less. I mean, he's not just blessing us because we're that special. There's a purpose.
Well, because of the promise he made. Promise he made to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob.
Well, I mean, he has a purpose for blessing this country.
Because of why?
Well, I think it's the help of Israel.
It's basically nothing more than we are the closest friend of Israel. I mean, they can't separate the two of us. It's really difficult to separate two countries. There's over half the population of Israel were former Americans. So they're not going to be anti-American.
You don't have to know Hebrew to go to Israel, right?
This country is blessed because why? God has decided all good things come from above. So if you have a great blessing, and you have a blessing of this and a blessing of that, it does not come from any other source than that which from above.
Right.
We all know that. We recognize that. So in humility, in humbleness, we need to be able to acknowledge something toward God. And when the time comes for the Day of Atonement to spiritually and truly eliminate all sins, transgressions, and iniquities, not only in our own lives, but in the lives of our entire country, and all of the dust of Jacob, and all of the house of Israel. That makes sense?
Yeah.
This is a prophetic thing. Because Balaam couldn't see. Now, in the 24th chapter, he sees. We'll get to there tomorrow, next week. Any more questions?
This was cool.
I think, I know I take a lot of time going through the Torah, and it takes a lot of time going through chapter by chapter and point by point. But see, I'm a teacher more than just a preacher. I got to tell you what is there, and studying the Hebrew and reaching the Hebrew, and you studying things that are even, quote, outside of Hebrew in Judaism and what they had ancient of days ago. I don't look at what Judaism believes today anymore. Be perfectly correct, politically correct, if I can. You have heard that it was said, even in the Christian world today. They got a concept. It's not evil. A concept that is not clear. It's a picture that's not open. And same with Judaism. They have a concept, but it's not clear. It's not open. And the reason is because God has not opened the eyes.
Right. Yeah.
If God's opened up your eyes, he's opened up my eyes, it is a blessing. Okay? And I think that's what's happening to an awful lot of groups like us, where what do we call ourselves? What was it? Describe Basiotic. What was that word? The phrase?
Oh, the river?
Yeah. Tell them.
There's a rabbi up in Idaho, a Messianic rabbi, who describes Messianic Judaism. I forget the name of the lake. I should remember that, but I'm going to tell the story. It's the start of the Mississippi River. And the question he asks is, would you rather drink water coming out of the lake or before it gets right when it gets to New Orleans? That's the way he describes it. We're going right back to the original source.
Go back to the original source where it came from.
You know, after years and years and years of changes and things that are picked up in the river.
By the time it got down to the sea, you don't want to drink that water. It's pretty polluted. Yes, that got a cute way of putting it. Yes.
I've always thought that life was a series of going backwards and finding our beginning rather than just going ahead.
That's what Genesis 1:1 is all about. What Genesis 1:1 is all about.
He has a Messianic. He starts a Messianic congregation. He's currently starting one up in Idaho.
What's his name?
Booker. I'm going to Idaho in a couple weeks for vacation.
I thought it was kind of an interesting statement. So you kind of describe yourself where you started from. You start from the beginning, which is clean and pure and holy.
Yeah.
That's where you start from.
We're so messed up, we just can't manage to crawl back.
But the power and the will of God, we can go back.
Amen.
Isn't that okay. What we're trying to do right here?
What we are doing right now. We are on the process of returning back to the beginning. Yes.
Actually, we aren't. God is taking a group of people and...
We have a choice to leave Egypt or stay.
He's taking us back and starting.
And we maybe complain because we like Egypt better than where we're at. Okay. That's it for today.